We're in Bashkortostan, a Russian republic where north meets south, where the nature is as rich as it is diverse. It boasts absolutely stunning landscapes, flowing rivers, cliffs, caves, gorges, and forests. But the real attraction here is the honey, and that creates a real buzz all over Russia.
It's produced by a special species of bee unique to this area. The Borzian bee is endangered and is carefully protected by the local people here.
Azamat, nice to meet you.
Hello. We're going to open this log hive and harvest honey, but we'll start by scenting our clothes with smoke.
And what's that for?
When there's smoke, bees think there's a fire and begin to load up on honey, sucking it through their tongue. That stops them stinging the beekeeper, because they're preoccupied with the job of saving the honey.
Have you sprayed me with enough smoke? Dima, okay.
Yes. Okay, now we're going to open it. A worker bee lives around 20 to 40 days, so the hive population is a constant cycle. The queen lays eggs, larvae hatch, and develop into bees. Worker bees don't live long.
So they died naturally?
It's a natural process, yes.
So what's so special about these Borzian bees, Azamat?
The unique thing about the Bashkir Borzian bee is that it lives in tree hollows all year round. Over the centuries, they've adapted to this lifestyle. Winter temperatures here can drop to minus 45 degrees Celsius.
You can hear them.
Look, we housed bees in this empty tree hollow. And they've started to build a honeycomb.
Is it true that these bees are more aggressive than regular bees, Azamat?
It's true that Bashkir bees are somewhat aggressive because they've always been out in the wild. Bees have natural enemies like bears, martins, or woodpeckers. If a bear finds out about a bee colony, it will almost certainly raid it. Last year, a female bear raided 6 beehives and 4 tree hollows.
Really?
Yes.
The sound's also different than what I expected, Azamat. They're buzzing a bit, but they're also sort of squeaking. Why is that?
Right now, the weather isn't great for bees. We've been having a lot of strong, cold rain. Heavy rainfall washes the nectar away from the flowers. And hungry bees make a different sound.
And does it get more aggressive when it's hungry, like a human being?
It does make them more aggressive too, just like people. They're satisfied when they're full.
They get hangry?
Yes. Look at this honeycomb. The bees have been building it and collecting nectar. If they have a good year, they'll fill this whole space with honeycomb. It's 90 centimeters high.
Really?
The base of this honeycomb is made entirely from nectar, which also improves the quality of the honey. Everything's natural.
What are the unique properties of Bashkir honey? I know that obviously Manuka does have some medicinal properties. Can the same be said about this honey here?
What you have here is a mixture of honeycomb, comb capping, bee bread, and bee glue. It's all mixed together. That's what makes it so rich and healthy. Honey and honey drinks are a good remedy against colds. Another thing that makes wild honey different is how you consume it. Look, this is crushed wild honey. The top layer is honeycomb, bee bread, etc., while the honey itself, which is heavier, stays at the bottom. Now you see, I've stirred it, and it's ready to eat.
And it's all consistent now.
Try it.
It's really thick. It's really thick.
That's real natural wild honey.
It's really fresh. Let's go and talk some more about the bees a bit further from here, Azamat. How do the bees organise their colonies here, Azamat? Is it any different to any other type of bee?
Each bee family has only one queen. The rest are worker bees and drones. The queen's sole purpose is to lay eggs. Worker bees gather nectar, build honeycomb, and produce honey. Drones also have just one function, and that's to mate with the queen.
So the way you collect honey hasn't changed for centuries. Can you show me how it's done, please, Azamat? Let's go. Azamat, well, you're certainly a braver man than I am. Well done. Now, the honey that you've just taken from there, it looks different to regular honey.
It has a different taste because we only harvest wild honey once a year. As bees gather nectar from different flowers from early spring until the end of the summer, all this abundance stays in the honey. It's all here mixed together.
So you only find out the taste later in the season?
Yes, only in autumn.
Now, I heard that back in the day you used to put marks on the trees. What did those marks mean, and do you still do it, the trees that have hives in them?
Wild beekeeping was widespread in the past, and each beekeeper would put his family sign on the trees. Those signs would be passed down from generation to generation. And they'd be used to mark each beekeeper's trees. We still have signs. But I just put up the letter A.
Azamat.
Yes, it should be here somewhere.
You need to do it again, Azamat. Are you sure that this is your tree?
Sure.
And how do you ensure that the bees make their hive in this tree? Is there anything you need to do to make sure that they set up camp there?
When a hive swarms, bees first gather on a nearby tree or bush. About 2 hours later, what we call scout bees, which go in search of suitable places for a new colony, like tree hollows, come back and communicate their findings to the queen through a special dance. Then the swarm departs. What we do to attract bees is, when we hollow out logs or tree trunks for them, we put small bits of honeycomb without honey inside to leave a scent. You can also sweep the inside of a hollow with birch branches or melissa stalks, a plant that attracts bees. This is wild honey. See?
Yeah.
Taste it. It's great.
I'd love to. Oh, thank you very much, Azamat. Tastes like flowers. Now, this is an amazing honey, Azamat. And obviously, I'm sure you want to preserve it, and it's popular all over Russia. But what are the main threats that you're worried about to the bees here?
Unfortunately, there are threats. Right now, the Burzian bee, or the Bashkir European dark bee population, is endangered. And we need more log apiaries like this one to breed them in a natural environment, with minimal human presence and far away from other bee species.
Thanks very much, Azamat. It's very delicious honey you have here.
You're welcome.
The beautiful nature of Bashkiria opens up in all its splendor on the Bielaya, or White, River. Heavy rain has caused it to swell, but that's not going to stop us from exploring it.
Dinara, Bashkiria is uniquely located between the north and the south of the country, between Asia and Europe. How is this reflected in the countryside and the nature here?
It's true that Bashkiria combines elements from the West with Asian influences. The high Ural Mountains here, in my opinion, look like something from the East. On the other hand, we have plains, and our natural habitats are very diverse. We have lakes, rivers, mountains, plains, etc. A little bit of everything. That's what makes our region so attractive.
Mm-hmm. And we're on the Bielaya Reka now, which means the White River in English, but it has another name, Agidiel. Where does this come from and what does it mean?
Agidel also literally means a white river. Agidel. This is the traditional Bashkir name for the river. Why white? It's because of the limestone. It gives the water a hue. There is another version as well. Apparently, they used to call rivers flowing from the south white rivers.
So does this river also go to the south? Where would it go to if we followed it all the way?
We're now in the upper course of the river in the Burzianski district. The White River, Agidel, starts in the Uchalinski district, near the sacred Bashkir mountain of Irimil. It starts as a little spring and goes on to become a major waterway. Its total length is almost 1,500 kilometers. It flows almost throughout the whole of Bashkortostan, to the border with Tatarstan, where it flows into the Kama, and the Kama flows into the Volga, which eventually flows into the Caspian Sea.
So you could go all the way to the Caspian Sea if we followed this river?
Yes, you could.
That's amazing. I don't think we'll do that today, though.
Not today, no. We'd need more time.
So we've had quite a lot of rain in the past couple of days, and as you can see, the river's flowing, I would say, quite quickly. So when was the last time that it was this high and this fast? Do you remember?
I myself don't remember that, of course, but those older than me say it was like this in 1991. It's highly unusual for the water level to be this high.
So we're quite lucky then.
Yes, we're lucky to see this. It's very unusual.
And do you know how this river formed? Why are there so many caves dotted along the banks?
If you look at the cliffs along the banks, you will see many little caves and cracks. The caves here are mostly solutional, or karst caves, which means the water eroded soft rock formations, creating holes and passages inside the mountains. The Kap of a cave, which is the most famous cave around here, is also an example of a karst cave.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There are dozens of caves dotted along the banks of this river, and one of the largest and most famous is Shulgantash, or Karpova, and it's just about coming into view now, so I'm going to find out what makes it so special. Mikhail, what an amazing space this is. It's absolutely stunning.
Absolutely. It's a very interesting place. It's Shulgantash, a very ancient cave which is essentially a shrine that scientists believe to be a sacred space where numerous rituals may have been conducted in ancient times.
Now, you've given us these rather fetching white overalls. I feel like a forensics expert at a crime scene. Why do we need to wear these inside the cave?
In general, it's considered best not to bring any alien organic material into caves. There is special caving wear that prevents contamination with organic matter, such as hair, dust, dirt, food particles, or remnants of household items. Any objects that enter the cave can grow mold, bacteria, fungi, etc. Essentially, our task is to preserve the cave's interior in its unchanged state, because it's a very valuable archaeological site.
Now, Mikhail, the cave stretches back an amazing 3 kilometers or so, and it's already revealed many of its secrets to geologists, archaeologists. How much more do you think there's left to discover in this cave?
This is a very large cave, one of the largest in the country. Although it's not the longest in total length, it has very big, spacious chambers. It's of great interest to archaeologists, historians, ethnographers, chemists, biologists, geologists, and so on. Now, please turn on your flashlight. We need to adapt to the darkness of the cave.
How many levels are there in this cave, and how have they managed to stand here for thousands and thousands of years, Mikhail?
The cave is conventionally divided into 3 levels, an underwater level, a 0 or first level, and a 1st or 2nd level. Regarding its age and origin, it's a karst water cave, which is typical for almost all caves in the world. The river we pass by, the Shulgan River, which flows from the Blue Lake, is an ancient river that has washed through the Shulgan Tash cave for 4.5 million years, shaping it underwater.
And where are we going now, Mikhail?
We're now heading to the 2nd chamber on the 2nd level. Here you can see the oldest artwork in the Shulgan Tash cave.
Awesome, let's go and check them out. Now, one of the things that Karpova Cave is most famous for is, of course, the paintings. How old are they and what do they depict?
This ancient cave art is believed to be around 20,000 years old. There are various approaches to deciphering ancient paintings, but no ancient painting has ever been fully deciphered anywhere in the world. Numerous attempts have been made, and information is gathered, with Shulgan Tash being no exception. It's generally believed that this cave might have housed a colossal ancient shrine around 20,000 years ago. In our part of Eurasia, this might be the oldest shrine, the oldest cave with ancient paintings.
And what do they show, Mikhail? I can see what looks like a mammoth there. What else is there?
Mammoths did roam this area. And there are images of rhinoceroses, because they were quite common here 40,000 years ago.
There were rhinos here in Bashkiria 40,000 years ago.
That's right. So, in fact, this was the local fauna. They inhabited this area. But the image of the rhinoceros here is quite mysterious. You see, according to modern data obtained from indirect radiocarbon dating, the drawings are 20,500 years old at most. However, rhinoceroses became extinct 20,000 years before that, and we don't know how they could be depicted, where these images came from. Either the painters reconstructed the animal's shape from bones, or we have the dating wrong, and it's a 40,000-year-old drawing. Or maybe it was painted 20,000 years ago, and we just haven't found more recent remains of woolly rhinoceroses in Bashkiria.
What sort of human remains have been discovered here, Mikhail, and what do they tell us about the way people lived back then?
Presumably, about 8 human remains have been discovered in the cave, Homo sapiens. 250 years ago, some local legends described the cave as an unusual place. While we cannot confirm a continuous tradition spanning 20,000 years, we're still looking at a very old tradition, in which the cave was used as a special site for rituals and believed to be the dwelling for forces of evil. This tradition suggests the presence of a cave guardian, whom the local people may have worshipped, either the guardian or the cave itself.
On the one hand, we were very unlucky with the weather today because the lake is all dirty and it's risen, but we heard a huge clap of thunder before and it created such an atmosphere in the cave that you can only imagine what the ancient people thought when that happened.
According to some rather cautious assumptions made by modern researchers, the cave guardian was an ancient ruler of natural forces, capable of granting rich hunting rewards, imparting knowledge, and punishing those who violated prohibitions and ventured too close. While it's difficult to confirm this information, it's still believed this tradition remained more or less unchanged over the centuries and may have ancient origins.
Now, these mounds aren't just your average hill. They're called shikans, and they're actually ancient coral reefs. And if we were filming here 300 million years ago, we'd need our scuba gear because we'd actually be at the bottom of a prehistoric sea.
Fannies, these shikans are certainly very striking formations in the landscape here. How did they form?
In terms of geology, there are ancient reef structures of the Permian period. A long time ago, about 300-350 million years ago, there was a fairly shallow and warm sea here on the continental shelf. And much like with the modern Great Barrier Reef in Australia, a long chain of large reef structures was formed over time. It stretched from the present-day Caspian Sea to the Arctic Ocean. Then, about 5 million years ago, Bashkiria got lucky in a way. As a result of new tectonic movements, the so-called Sterlitamak-Shikhan block was elevated to the surface. Today, we can see the remains of that ancient reef massive in mountain form.
Fascinating. And what sort of things can we learn from the corals in these shikans and the shapes themselves?
Thanks to various fossils, we can trace the geological history of this area and our planet in general. 2 years ago, a sample of algae was found nearby on Shikhan Kushtau, which had previously been discovered only in North America. Also, an ammonite previously located only in China was found on Shikhan Shahtau, one of the hills that's now destroyed. Now, from these findings, we know that Bashkiria was also inhabited by those ancient species and can be included in their range maps. So essentially, we revised the geological history of our planet.
It's amazing because we're so far from the sea here, but still you're discovering these ancient sea creatures. Are these shikans truly unique to Bashkiria, or are there similar formations elsewhere in the world, Fannies?
Permian age reef structures like this aren't only found in Bashkiria, but also in North America and in China, for example. However, only in Bashkiria are they both well-preserved and easily accessible.
What can you tell me about the folklore surrounding these shikans here in Bashkiria? I heard there's a story about a tragic romance. What can you tell me about that?
For a long time, a tribe lived in this area known as Yurmats, and in their culture, these mountains were sacred. They have a legend that explains the origin of the shikans. It has nothing to do with geology, just an ancient people's attempt to explain the landscape they observed. According to the legend, there was a girl called Agidel and a mean guy named Ashkadar who fell in love with her. He decided to kidnap her. So to avoid that, Agidel asked her father Ural to transform her into a river so that she could flee. Determined to catch her, Ashkadar put a castle in front of the river, which turned into the first shikhan. When this didn't stop her, he turned into another shikhan, Shakhtau, meaning king. Finally, he realized that no barriers would stop her and gave her his heart, and it became Shikhan Yuraktau, or Heart Mountain. But Agidel escaped anyway and continued running forward, leaving those shikans behind.
So I heard that there were four shikans here originally, but now there's just three. What happened to such a giant formation? Where did it disappear to?
Like any rock formation in general, like all mountains, they can erode. This is a long geological process that can last for millions of years. But humans' activity is accelerating this process, and that's what happened to one of the Sterlitamak shikans called Shakhtau. The Soviet Union was in need of raw materials, and one of the local shihans was used as a source of caustic soda for the metal industry and cement production. And so since 1965, one of the shihans, Shahtao, has been actively developed. In 2023, we submitted our request to UNESCO to include the three remaining shihans on the World Natural Heritage List. We are now waiting for UNESCO's response, and it's important for the locals because these mountains have a great cultural and spiritual significance to our people. Also, they are of great value to natural sciences.